Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Adam Elliott and I'm joined today by Martin Riley, as ever, and Dan Holdsworth. Dan, how are you, mate?
I'm absolutely fabulous. I'm proper stoked to talk about Millwall. They're beautiful.
Neil Harris's Millwall. And how about you, Martin? How are you feeling? Talk about this. And what are you eating tonight?
I am doing good. I have eaten some piri piri pork steaks with some mashed potato and peas, and it was bloody lovely, really nice. The piri piri wasn't quite as spicy as I like it, so I added some extra hot sauce on top of it. But yeah, other than that, it was very good. So I'm well fed and ready to talk about Millwall.
Well, you, Dan, what did you eat?
I was quite healthy tonight. I had some like tandoori chicken, sort of homemade, with wraps and salad. But the reason for that is because I had a disgraceful fried breakfast and a sausage roll with mushy peas for lunch. So I just thought I'd better balance it out with something sensible tonight.
You know, I often do that as well. And so I've had a bad weekend because it was actually my birthday over the weekend. So I've decided at the start of this week to be healthy again. Like last night I made like a gnocchi bake, which had like onion and broccoli and cream cheese and cream in it. And it was delicious. And tonight I had like a Spanish chicken thing and it was really healthy, loads and loads of veg in that as well. So pretty good myself, yes. But we're here today, obviously, to talk about Millwall. We don't actually have opposition analysis person. Sorry about that. I think we'll have some more coming up very, very soon. But who better to talk about it than me, Dan, and Martin, of course. So anyway, the first question, I guess, is how has the season so far been for Millwall? Has anything changed recently? Well, first answer to give there is that yes, it has, because Neil Harris is back in charge for his second stint as manager. He's a bit of a club legend. I'm sure loads of Leeds fans know him from our years stuck in the Championship. He was 10 years a player at Millwall in the sort of late 90s, early 2000s, and then he spent 6 years as a manager between 2013 and 2019. But what else has changed this season? I'll go to you first, Dan. Can you tell us anything about the other guys that have managed Millwall this season?
Yeah, so the start of the season with Gary Rowett, who had quite a good season for them last year. I think they came seventh. They were sort of in the hunt, playoff hunt, weren't they, anyway, and they were pretty good. And then just had a kind of difficult start to the season. Leeds fans might cast their mind back to when we beat them reasonably comfortably early in the season. It was one of our really kind of big results, I think, when Farke was just getting hold of the team. And not too long after that, in October, they sacked Gary Rowett and hired a guy called Joe Edwards, who kind of took over, and I think he was given the remit of making them, you know, getting them playing attractive possession, high intense football kind of thing. And I just don't think they had the squad for that, and it just didn't work at all. Joe Edwards kind of ran the team for some time, and it was getting less than a point a game, I think like 0.84 a game, and it was just, they were just slipping towards relegation real fast. So I think they've basically panicked and gone for Millwall's version of Sam Allardyce, and they've got Neil Harris in, haven't they, basically, and back to doing Millwall type things.
Yeah, they got him in from Cambridge, actually.
Yeah.
So he's actually one of the only managers to ever do this, but he's managed in League Two this season, lost his job at Gillingham, got a move up to the Cambridge in League One. And then as soon as Millwall came calling, of course, he took their call and he decided to go. So it's been going pretty well for him so far, though, hasn't it, Martin?
Yeah, the recent results since he's come in have been very strong compared to what they were previously. I mean, he's only had 4 games so far in which he's been in charge, but there was some relatively tough games in there. Well, they've had Southampton, Watford,
they're rubbish,
Blackburn and Birmingham. So three of those sides who on their day, decent sides. Obviously, Southampton is one of the better sides in the division, we know this. And they beat Southampton 2-1, beat Watford 1-0, drew 1-1 against Blackburn and beat Birmingham 1-0. But what's quite interesting, in every single one of those, it was a narrow loss on per XG. So against Southampton, they lost 1.5 to 1.1 on XG and they won that game 2-1. Then 0.6 to 0.5 at Watford and won that 1-0. And against Blackburn, it sounds like a very dull game, 0.6 to 0.3, and they drew that 1-1. So yeah, it's pretty standard Millwall affair that Leeds fans will know. Tight games, not a lot of action going on for either side, really. And so yeah, it's got off to the way Millwall fans will be very happy with him, Sean. And he's a bit of a legend for Millwall.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure with some of those games, you could maybe put it down to some game state factors. But yeah, they against Southampton, they took the lead quite early, for example. But they were always going to be sort of taking a bit of a battering when it came to playing against them, I expect. But yeah, you kind of know what you get a little bit with Neil Harris. But at the same time, can either of you discuss how they actually set up under him in possession since he's come back? I'll start with you first, Martin, again.
So it's been a 4-4-2 since he's come back in, which is what he always was with Millwall before. And that's pretty much what you'd expect from him. And the tactics are, as you would expect as well, in possession. The arc, they can be quite direct and they will look to get crossed into the box as soon as they can. And I don't want to say what else I could really add on to that. A lot of wide play going on. Let's not get the fullbacks too high on the pitch, mainly leaving it to the wingers and trying to keep things quite quick and relatively fluid. But yeah, that's not too much else I can say. I'm not sure if Dan can say anything different. I know he's watched a bit more than I have.
Yeah, so no, you're completely right. The basic is very, very basic 4-4-2 for older listeners thinking back to the 1990s. I mean, I watched them play Blackburn recently. Been prepped for this. It was like watching a game from 1994. Just sort of two banks of four. You know, like a guy, like a target man, and a second forward who's a little bit more skillful, trying to, you know, pick up the ball. And that's Fleming, by the way. And yeah, it's just all very compact and back to front real quick. They'll kind of play the ball out to Tanganka, who people might have heard of. He was a Spurs guy on loan there, or Jake Cooper, the centre backs. And they'll try and kind of entice the opposition in a little bit. Get it past the first line and then ping it, basically. That's about as complicated as it gets. I was just looking at some of the passing stats. I mean, they have really low passing accuracy. They don't, you know, they kind of, since Harris has come in, like the percentage of the possession ratio has gone down from 42% average to 33% average. Only 4 games, of course, but like that's quite a big drop from already a low number. Before Harris came in, they were like attempting 419 passes a game. They're now attempting 312 passes, which matches that. They haven't had actually a big increase in long pass percentage, but I just in terms of a ratio. But yeah, they hit it long, you know, a lot, you know, almost probably 20% of their balls that they play are kind of direct long balls, and a good chunk of medium long balls. So they just kind of wallop it forward. They don't care about possession, looking for second balls. It's worth pointing out also that of those results recently, only one of the how many goals have they scored? 5 goals have scored. It's been from open play, I think. The rest, the other 4 were set pieces, all from set pieces. So you can guess what's coming basically on Monday.
Yeah, obviously one of the strengths of Harris's teams in the years that have gone by has been set pieces. So I feel like we might have a bit of a Preston or Huddersfield type performance against us is quite likely. You discussed a little bit about out of possession. Do you have anything to add there on that regard, Martin?
So yeah, they're pretty much quite a low block side at times, but they are quite aggressive in general. Combative, I think, would be the correct words. Both in both areas of the pitch, in deeper areas and in more advanced. So they can have some moments where they press high, but it's not too often. Potentially against us, maybe that could be a little bit more aggressive, but considering, I believe this game's at Elland Road, right? Yeah, thought it was because it was a game we beat them at the Den, wasn't it? And that was quite a result which wasn't always foreseen. We don't do very well at the Den, so the players would be quite up for this one, I'd imagine. But yeah, it will be a lot of low block defending, lots of players defending their box and making things as difficult as they can for us. You'd imagine their wingers will track our fullbacks quite high, quite deep as well. So it's then looking more like a six at the back rather than a four. So it's going to be painful for us to try to navigate our way through it. But we have faced a number of low block sides, and I think we've made some good strides in dealing with that, especially in the recent fixtures that we've had. Off the Huddersfield wasn't a great example, but last game we did really well going a bit more direct. So that's the sort of thing that I'd be hopefully looking for, but I don't think Millwall will have a line go with it like we saw in the last game. So it could be a bit more difficult to break down, but I back our players to do well, especially Elland Road, to break through it. And yeah, it's still always going to be a testing fixture, is it, against Millwall?
Yeah, just a quick reminder, we haven't dropped points in a home game since mid-December against Coventry. We have won every single game in the league since then. So we have actually been better, because at the start of the season, we had a few games that were a little bit sort of scrappy and teams sat deep in a low block and it was difficult to unlock. But as the season progressed, we've become a lot better at doing so. But we are expecting them to make this a bit of a battle, make it as scrappy as possible, be aggressive in duels, be aggressive in both boxes as much as possible. They've got a lot of height and physicality in their team, don't they? And on that, I guess the question is, which sort of players do we need to look out for? I'll start with you, Dan.
Well, one of my first notes here is near post set piece Claxon. Jake Cooper, near post from corners.
He's massive,
he's good in the air, and Millwall have been using him as a weapon in that respect for years, so they're well practised. I mean, as I said before, they've scored most of their goals since Harris came in from set pieces. I mean, one was a penalty, to be fair, but still a set piece. One direct free kick, and the rest were corners, balls into the box. And they mixed it up, some good near post deliveries, some kind of floated stuff for Cooper to get on, but yeah, that's the big threat. So yeah, it's kind of a worry because I think it's probably the weakest element of our defending at the moment, particularly with Big Pascal, who is probably our best aerial player in unset piece situations. So yeah, that's a slight worry. But beyond that, they don't particularly worry me. So,
Martin, is there any players you wanted to give a quick nod to in their team that you're particularly worried about besides from Jake Cooper?
So yeah, probably their biggest threat when they're in open play sequences is Zan Fleming. He's the one who's got the most XG in total across the side, and he's also created the most shots as well, most shot creating actions from live passes. So he's the one who generally does do what they want in possession. And as I said, he's going to be likely to be the guy in the front two who will be dropping that a little bit deeper. So kind of playing like a false nine. I think more naturally he's an attacking midfielder, so he will be that little bit deeper. And also they've brought in someone during the January window, Michael Obafemi. I believe he came in recently, and he played for Swansea quite heavily, and he was quite good for them, and he's got a lot of pace, so he's a bit different to most of their other attacking players. So I think he's one who we will have to keep an eye on in transitional attacks. He will be quite a big weapon for them to get them up the pitch quickly. And some other players who I noticed in the stats was Imaku. I think I'm saying that right. But he hasn't been starting every game, but he does have the most take-ons per 90. So he attempts nearly six of the 90. I think he's played like nearly 8 full 90s with a lot of sub appearances thrown into there. But so he's very, very much a vibesy winger who will look to take on his number. But he isn't successful with a lot of those. So 43% of the time he's successful. So it's a pretty low percentage. But that still does mean that he's successful with nearly 3 per game. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on for whichever one of our fullbacks is up against him. I would expect them to put him on the right side up against Junior Firpo. I think Gray should be able to deal with him maybe a little bit better. So that will be definitely a battle to keep an eye on if he does start. But even more so, if he's an impact player, bringing him on fresh against tired legs would be also very useful as well. So no matter which way to use him, he will potentially cause us some damage. The guy who will be whipping in the set pieces, who's got the most from, is George Saville. He's got their most expected assists, and he's also got their most big chances created, which I would imagine the majority of those are from set pieces. Also, their goalkeeper, Sarkic, he's performing very well against his expected goals. So he's on a 1.2 XG overperformance based on the post-shot XG he's faced. So he's doing quite well to keep things tight at the back. One player to mention in the back line who attempts the most long balls for them, and considering long balls is a key part of their game, this is something that we should keep an eye on, is Ryan Leonard. He attempts 13 long passes per 90. So we'll have to make sure we're pressurising him to stop him from being as effective with those. I mean, his success percentage isn't the greatest, only 43%, but it's not always... point of these long balls is the success of it. It's the second ball which goes behind it, so we have to be cautious when defending and making sure we're winning those second balls when they do get long balls up the pitch. But I do think that is something we have generally been quite strong with this season. We've been quite aggressive in getting to those second balls, and I'd expect that to stay the same. But yeah, they're the main ones who are there in a positive sense, and I think their back line is quite weak when it comes to direct pace. So if they are depending on any transitional attacks, if they do commit bodies forward on occasion and we do get a bit of space, that will be quite dangerous to their back line. However, most of the time I do expect them to be quite deep, so pace should not be too much of a problem for them. But yeah, that's about all I can add on there. I'm not sure if Adam has anything extra to add. I know he's watched a little bit of them.
Yeah, before we started the pod today, I just noted down a few of the names that had been at the club since before, when Harris was first sort of sacked there back in 2019. There's actually quite a lot more than you'd think. All the centre-backs, so there's a lot of familiarity there. So Hutchinson, Cooper, Wallace, they're all around. Then Leonard, as you've mentioned, he was there. Saville, as you mentioned, he was there. Tom Bradshaw and McNamara were both there as well. And it's no surprise, really, that he has leaned on quite a lot of these guys since he's come in. But yeah, the main thing for me is that's quite interesting for them all season is that they've actually been a team that have not conceded actually a stupidly enormous amount of goals. It's scoring them that's been more of an issue. But then when you were talking about the front two, I do actually quite like both Fleming and Obafemi as a pairing. Obafemi's got that sort of physicality and that speed to stretch beyond. Fleming can kind of drop deep and play between the lines a little bit if you want him to, and feed off those scraps when they do come, when the ball sort of gets lost and then it's about a 50-50. And so yeah, there's quite a lot of players there that kind of makes sense to me, and it looks like a team that, even though there's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 players that are formerly from Harris's era, I think a lot of the squad still is set up nicely for him to have just come in and done what he's done, and that's probably explains a lot of the reasons why he's settled in so quickly and they've settled in so quickly to this style of play. I mean, it's quite basic, but it does work. And yeah, I think I agree with everything you said, really, and the pace aspect is interesting because I think he would like to lean on other centre-backs a bit more than Tanganga, perhaps, because he knows them. But I think the reason he's got Tanganga in there is because, well, he's performed well so far. He's scored a couple of goals. But also, he has a bit more speed than some of their other defenders, which is one of the issues you mentioned. So that makes a little bit of sense why he is put in the side. But yeah, not too surprised they go so direct, and not surprised it's working either. I think it's a case of anywhere will do for some of their players, and then they'll feed off that from there. And I think that's a bit of an issue for us. I remember against Preston when they they were not Preston, sorry, Huddersfield recently, when they were getting the ball sort of into wide areas quite quickly, and then kind of hoping for a throw in or a set piece of some sort to come from that. I think Millwall will be doing very, very much the same, and they've got the players to do so. But yeah, it is probably speed the way that we can get at them the most, but we'll have to wait and see. Dan, do you have anything else you wanted to add on players just quickly?
Yeah, so I mean, it's funny you said that, Martin, about long balls, Leonard. I've got a big right boot, switch to the left, and notes next to his name. I noticed a few that happened a few times in the Blackburn game I watched. What I thought was, it's kind of an old-fashioned idea, but they kind of work in pairs, don't they? They have a lot of nice little combinations. So not wonderful players, but in terms of profiles, a nice blend. So Cooper, the big guy that'll tap the ball, and Tanganga, maybe the guy that covers space behind. So a nice kind of combination. Mitchell and Saville kind of work in unit, like in a unit quite well. Saville will burst forward a little bit more. Mitchell will sit, I guess, but they can swap. Obafemi running behind, Fleming kind of dropping and, you know, ball to feet. So there's kind of nice little combinations, and they've got a reasonable amount of pace. So as Martin mentioned, Canby, quite an interesting guy. He came from Ireland, I think, in last January. Watmore's quick. Yeah, so I think there's kind of nice combinations if they're not necessarily individually the best players in the world. So I guess they're going to hunt in packs, aren't they, and try and get little combinations going with those kind of profiles against us. But yeah, it's not amazingly scary. But yeah, Obafemi and Fleming are potentially a good front pair, I think, at this level.
Martin, what does the data actually say about their season so far?
So I had a quick look, and there's one stat which will not surprise anyone at all who's listening here, which stood out immediately, which was their set play XG4, which is third in the league. They've created the most set piece XG with 14.78, and have scored 14 goals from that. I think probably the biggest surprise there for me was that they're not overperforming that set play XG, because they've got a lot of good aerial threats there, so that's quite surprising. But still, to be hitting the target for the XG is totally fine, so no problem with that. But then, like you mentioned, the goal scoring issue, other than set pieces, that'd be a problem for them. And the XG does put a 22nd in the league for XG created, 19.96. And they've actually overperformed that with scoring 21 goals from open play from that. So that's the reason why they are as low in the league as what they are. They're just not creating a lot of XG from open play at all. They can't always get set plays going for them. But given that Leeds fans were already quite wounded when it comes to set pieces recently, that's probably the area where we should be the most worried for death, for sure. And like we alluded to earlier there, they don't let in a massive amount of goals. They're 12th for XG against with 32.54. and conceded 35 goals from that. So overall, their opponents have scored more than the XG. However, I think Sack himself has been the one who's been doing better than their other goalkeeper, which whose name escapes me at the moment. But yeah, so
Bielkowski.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, that's right. So yeah, so he's, I think, been brought in and has been making a bit more of a difference to them doing the sticks, so that will have helped them. And the set play XG against is, again, quite low, 10.98, 15th in the league, and conceded 7 goals from that. So it shows that they're doing something right when it comes to conceding chances and managing to save them. Potentially, they could have some good positioning on where their players are, such to block headers or to other things like that. Obviously, without doing lots of their games, I couldn't say for sure. But they're definitely doing something right when it comes to stopping set play XG, because it's a lot different to open play. So it's quite an interesting little quirk there.
Absolutely. And also, I just looked up Jake Cooper's height, by the way, and it's given me a little bit of a fright. He's 6'6". I knew he was tall, but that is ginormous. And on that, I guess, the predicted lineup. Dan, do you want to have a stab at that for us?
Yeah, so Sakic in goal has been the main guy this year. Leonard's pretty steadily been picked at right back. Tanganga and Cooper, centre-backs. Now, they've got Joe Bryan, who people may remember from Fulham, and he's played left-back. He played the last game, but McNamara's also played, so it could be one of either of those two. I wouldn't be shocked if they pick Joe Bryan, because I think he's quite good at set pieces, isn't he? I mean, people famously.
Yeah, I think him and Saville are both left-footed, though, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, but Bryan at left-back instead of McNamara, who's right-footed, so...
Yes, he is.
So we'll see if that plays out. So KMB on the wing. Honeyman, perhaps, or what more? So two of those three wingers. Mitchell Saville's the centre mid pair, and I think Fleming Obafemi is the forward line. So yeah, there's a couple of options on the wing, and perhaps a Brian at fullback rather than McNamara. But yeah, it's a pretty steady team, I think.
Does the name Sarkic mean anything to you, Martin?
Well, and we used to have a goalkeeper called Oliver Sarkic. Is he some way related to that Sarkic?
So that goalkeeper is related to the player that we had. The player we had was actually an attacking midfielder, I think. He was at Burton, but I don't know where he is now. But I just wanted people to know that his brother is the guy in goal. So if anyone's thinking, I recognise that name, yeah, it's his brother. So there you go. Anything to...
Montenegrin, famous for the footballers.
Indeed. Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Anything to add on the lineup there, Martin, or are you pretty much in agreement with Dan?
No, that's the lineup that I put into the run order. So yeah, I'm happy enough that that's what it's going to be. The only question marks were on left back and on one of the wide spots. I think KMB spot is nailed on, but the other wing spot is relatively open. They've played three different players in four games in which Harris has been there on the wing alongside KMB. So it will be either one of Honeyman, Imaku or Longman.
Lovely. Right, well, that brings us to the end of this section of the podcast. But before we move on to the analysis of Leeds, we're going to go for a quick ad break. But first, a little bit more about our patron. And don't worry, patrons, you do not have to hear this bit. But if I didn't do it, Tom Alderson might kill us all before we even had the chance to watch Millwall. Patreon is a media platform where you can support content creators that you enjoy and you get extra content in return. Our patrons can get access for as little as $1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts. And if you want to pay a little bit more, you get other benefits, including early access to our preview pods, such as the one you're listening to right now, analysis articles, videos, and other bonus podcasts as well, which I think we've got coming very, very soon. While we've got the international break, we'll do a little bit of extra stuff for you guys. We have three tiers in total, though, for the Patreon, which are Martin.
So you've got the variety tier at $1.99, which is basically the cheapest one, which gives you ad-free podcasts, but it's mainly just there just to give us that little bit of support. And the middle tier is the clicker tier for $3.99, which also gives you ad-free podcasts and early access to the preview pods like this one. And then the upper class tier, the Pablo tier, is $4.99, which includes all the previous benefits, ad-free podcasts, early access to preview pods, and then everything else that we put out. So any articles, pods, say bonus pods and videos, that'll all be on there. So you get the most bang for your buck with the Pablo tier, really.
Yep, and it really does help us out because we can also get more opposition analysis done on this as well. So if you would like to sign up, if that sounds like it's something that would interest you, then where can they visit, Dan?
Patreon.com/ASAW, Patreon.
Fantastic, chaps.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, well, we'll move straight on into the Leeds analysis now. Do we have any fresh injury concerns? I realise we're recording this quite a few days before the press conference and he's probably going to tell us that everyone is dead. But is there anyone apart from Strouk and Stuart Dallas?
I think so.
Not that I know of. Nope.
Okay, lovely. Well, we'll get straight on into how do we expect we will approach the game in possession. I'll start with you first on that one, Dan.
Wait, so this is interesting. So I watched the Blackburn game against Millwall, as I've said probably too many times already. But Blackburn, in terms of the way style of play, not massively different, similar to Leeds, you know, kind of fairly try and draw teams out and fairly kind of direct and happy to transition. They've got players like that are quite like Dolan and Smodics, who are quite good in transition, sort of not natural wingers come inside kind of thing. And I found that Blackburn were able to kind of transition on Millwall a few times, and occasionally the ball over the top worked. So I just wonder if Leeds might actually sort of treat this a little bit like we treated the Wednesday game once we kind of worked it out. The Sheffield Wednesday game, we might go long early and try and kind of hit them on transition. So it might end up being quite a scruffy game, but you know, if we can generate quick transitions and play it forward quickly, we might get behind them. You know, Millwall aren't the quickest really at the back, so I guess probably front to back quick is probably the way to go on this one. It obviously depends how deep they sit, and that'll have an impact on this. But as Martin suggested, in terms of Millwall's out of possession, they don't always sit in a low block. They sometimes step out and go kind of, you know, into a combative mid block sometimes. So I guess we're just hoping for a bit of that and a bit of space to hit them behind.
Anything to add there, Martin?
I think Dan's hit the nail on the head with all he said there. I do think that we will obviously try to possess the ball, but we will look for openings where we can hit them in behind with direct balls like we saw against Wednesday. Especially if we see both Bamford and Routaire making runs beyond, like was happening against Wednesday. Routaire's definitely got pace to expose their back line. So yeah, that's what I would expect to happen as well.
Yeah, I think our approach obviously will be largely dictated by what they do. But at the same time, I do expect them to be deep and just get deeper and deeper as the game progresses, really. And maybe the only chance they have to get out are to look for those longer balls out, look for the second ball and the 50-50s and trying to win those. But if we can win those as much as possible where we can and win our individual battles in sort of defensive areas when the ball is high in the air or long, then I think we can pin them really easily. The ball will just keep coming back at them that way, and that means they will just naturally drop deeper and deeper. So it is going to be, for me, a lot about that. And we can really like turn the screw on them, I think, if we do that and keep them in their own third, really. How do you expect us to approach the game, though, when we do lose the ball and when Millwall actually have the chance to attack us? I'll start with you, Martin.
Yeah, we definitely will just approach this in the exact same way we do always. We will be aggressive in the press. They don't have very many defenders who are very capable ball players. Probably the best one would be Tim Granger. So I think we will just look to expose them as soon as we can, try to put pressure on them when they're trying to make those long passes forwards, try to put even more uncertainty into them and try to win high balls in that way. But I do expect them to go quite long before we get the chance to do that. So we will just be needing to be aware of that and alert to the second balls being won when, if we do win the first ball course. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how our backline does handle that. Generally, we have done well this season against more direct things like this, especially Joe Roden. He's been very good at it. So I would expect us to to win that, and also I'm going to give a bit of props to Glenn Kamara. He's been really good at picking up those second ball recently. So if he keeps that up, it'll be up to a task, because obviously Millwall's midfield is quite aggressive and combative. So they will have a challenge on their hands, Will Groove and Kamara.
Dan, how do you expect us to approach the game out of possession?
So Millwall, I mean, they don't play out like obviously from the back a great deal, but they do try and pass it a little bit to draw the position on before they launch it. And I've seen them give a few pressing opportunities up. They're basically clumsy as there's anything at the back, you know. We might have opportunities to press them, but they'll be fleeting. So I guess it's just going to be ready to jump on those moments when they do come along. So I kind of guess we might perhaps sit in a mid-block ready to be aggressive when the moment comes. But there won't be many moments to do that. But there will be some, so we should be ready for that. Like I say, some of the passes out to like the fullbacks before they ping it are not the best. So, yeah, that's that. I'm not overly worried about Leeds dealing with the long balls. I mean, I don't think Fleming and Obafemi are particularly big guys, and they're not going to bully our centre-backs, are they? It's going to be, you know, I would fancy Rodon and Ampadu to deal with those guys on a physical level. So I'm not overly worried about them, like Leeds, getting bullied in that respect. In open play, I think it's more when the big guys from the back come up for set pieces. That's when the physical bullying might happen. So, yeah, I just feel like if we can get to them early, great. And if we can't, then we're just going to have to recycle, aren't we? And hopefully go forward quickly from there.
Would you say the main reason for them delaying that sort of pass is to ensure they've got players more well positioned up the pitch? So by that I mean players in midfield are ready for the second ball if the striker either gets to it or he gets enough of a contact on the defender to sort of put him off, and then the header's maybe not great and they can pick up the scraps on those knockdowns. Do you think that's the main reason they delay it as well?
I think so.
Just to make sure they get up the pitch a
bit. Yeah, I think so. And I think they're trying to get people out of the midfield, aren't they? So they're looking for the opposition to step up and the midfielders to step forward. So it's exactly that. Get their players in position and perhaps just stretch the game so there's more space. I mean, one thing I noticed when watching them is a lot of the games ended up very ping-pongy in the middle, like a kid's game almost, the ball banging around in the middle quite a lot. You see quite a bit of that because of the way they play. I guess they're looking to kind of capitalise on those moments when they can with players like Savile and Mitchell to drive out of those moments and try and create something.
Yeah, we've already mentioned Glenn Kamara and the impact he might have, and I had him down as well as someone who might have a big impact on this game in terms of that scrappiness in midfield and a bit of a cool head on the ball, but also someone who can win the duels out of possession as well. But is there anyone you can see having a big impact on the outcome of this game from Leeds' perspective, Dan?
It's going to be like the quality of our ball from back to front, isn't it? So if Ampadu can hit some of those great long balls and Grove as well, those kind of players, we're looking for those guys to have a good game on the ball, aren't we? And just not be frustrated when a lot of the when it doesn't always work, and it's just, I think we're going to need that, aren't we? And probably Rüter in this, because we're going to need, we're not going to get a lot of space between the lines, are we? But I guess there will be moments where Rüter can get the ball and turn in their half, perhaps in a slightly transitioning moment, and we just hope he can kind of make the most of those moments. So if the ball is played forward quickly and Bamford manages to get hold of it and lay it off to Rüter, that's those kind of moments, isn't it, where we break forward quick. So,
and Martin, is there anyone you're worried about in particular in this game from our perspective?
Well, I already mentioned Junior Firpo a bit earlier about how he's going to deal with at the KMB or in our group, depending on which one they play on his side. So he's a potential one who could cause issues when they do get those transitional attacks. However, he's not been awful defensively recently. He's had a couple of slippy moments, but nowhere near as bad as what we have seen in the past. So maybe I'm doing a little bit of disservice, but that's the only thing I can really think of, because I'm confident in Ampadu and Roden dealing with anything that will come their way from the front two that they've got. I'm very confident in Archie Gray handling whoever he comes up against. And yeah, I can't think of anyone else who could potentially expose us to the damage, really.
Yeah, nice. I just wanted to add a tiny bit. One of the things I'm kind of interested to see from our perspective is, sort of how we deal with 50-50s and stuff like that. Our rest defence this season when dealing with transitions has been pretty good, though. And I do think a lot can be said of the way Ampadu and Roden have dealt with that. They do dovetail quite nicely as a pairing in that sense, because you've got Roden, who's a little bit taller, more aggressive, better in the air in that sense, and Ampadu, who's still going to do a fair amount of work around him as well. So that should be pretty much fine, as you both sort of alluded to. But one of the other things is that the directness of our balls recently, you both mentioned Chef Wednesday. I think that's an interesting one, because I think they are quite a strong team in duels and physically. And I don't know if our sort of channel balls are going to be hit like directly to our forward players, or actually sort of over Millwall where we can, and to see if our players can run onto them. There might not be a huge amount of space to do that in behind their defence, because they might be sat quite low. But when the moments do arise, it'll be interesting to see, because obviously we saw Bamford flick one around the corner really nicely against Chef Wednesday with his back to goal, and that was lovely. But I don't know if he'll get away with that against players like Cooper, who just seem to just really get up players' asses when they can, and will put them off as much as possible, and will just command physically completely. They're so dominant, and I wonder what we'll do in that sense. I think if there are opportunities down the flanks, maybe to hit into space for Somerville, Nonto, even Rüter, he pulls wide, I think that's a good area for us to try and exploit, but it might not happen all too often. But yes, while we're talking about players, shall we discuss a possible predicted lineup? Obviously, in the last game, he did make a couple of changes. despite the fact we'd won against Stoke. He obviously changed the fullback comparing completely. Do we expect too much different in this game from the Sheffield Wednesday game, or maybe go back slightly towards the Stoke game? Obviously, we've had a little bit more of a breather. We've had 9 days between Sheffield Wednesday and Millwall, which is good. But Dan, do you want to have a go at a predicted lineup and have a stab at that?
Yeah, I think it's the team that started against Sheffield Wednesday. I think that's his current 11. I think the Stoke team was the change team, if that makes sense. So yeah, it'd be Melier in goal, Archie Gray right back, Firpo left back, Ampadu Rodon back four, Gruff Kamara, Nonto Somerville, Georgie Bamford. I think that's his 11 at the moment. I think only Strike breaks that lineup, essentially, if he was fit.
Yep. And he definitely would start here, wouldn't he? Because of the height, yeah, physicality, yeah, and the set piece stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Even more so than usual. Yeah, I think so. He's going to be a bit of a miss. Probably is the area we need to be concerned about the most. Martin, do you expect any other changes? I guess Dan James is a question mark. He obviously played quite well against Stoke. And Nonto came back in and scored, played quite well. Do you think that that'll be a change he makes, or are we going to stick with what we saw against Wednesday?
I think we'll see a very similar lineup to what we saw against Wednesday. I agree with Dan. I think this is Farker's 11 with the currently available players, with only Pascal who could come into it to replace Groove, with Ampadu going back into his favoured midfield. But one thing I do wonder is potential. I would like to see Liam Cooper in this game, just for someone who has got a bit more aerial threat to help us on set pieces. Because then we would have, because Ampadu's already relatively tall, it's not weak in the air. So then we'd have that extra set piece defender. So it wouldn't just be left down to Rodon and Ampadu, we'd have Rodon, Ampadu, and Cooper. And I don't think their forward line is anything that Cooper shouldn't be able to handle. In the games that we have seen him play, I don't think he's made any massive mistakes. A couple of dodgy moments here and there. But nothing which worried me overly. So that will be something maybe I would like to see. But I don't think it will happen. I think it will stay as it has been. But that is just one thing that it wouldn't surprise me if that, something like that did happen, if Fab was paying attention to the set piece threat that they do pose, that someone who is an adversarial defender and Cooper was brought into it.
Yeah, I can't really disagree with that, actually. It's a good point. I didn't really think of it until you said it there, but it has to be said, in the last 9 games, this is probably the game that suits Cooper the most, really. I think he probably would have against Huddersfield as well, and in games like that, but this is definitely one where it would probably make some sense. It's not going to happen, like you said, but I agree with you. I think it would make a lot of sense if he did it, and I know a lot of fans would moan, but actually, Cooper dealing with their height, you know, their Cooper, and all of that might make some sense. And I was asking about Dan James, but really, I agree. I think Nonto starts, and actually, if they're going to be as deep as I think they're going to be, then I actually think he's a better player at unlocking those doors in a deeper block, a little bit more technical with his footwork and his combinations with others. So, and he's played really well with Archie recently when they've played together. So I would like to see that combination stay on the right. But what do you expect watching this game of football will look like, Dan?
It's going to be really messy. It's going to be really stop start. They're going to poo house. Is that the right phrase? It's going to be awful. They're going to be playing for set pieces. The crowd's going to get grumpy. And unless we score early, it's not going to be a lot of fun, I don't think, I'm afraid. But if we get an early goal, then I could see them crumbling a bit. But if we don't get an early goal and it gets broken up and the crowd get grumpy, it could be a bit of a sticky wicket, this one. It could be a difficult game.
Yeah, quite similar to what Dan said. We're going to be the ones who are dominating possession, and Millwall are going to be very aggressive in all duels. So I could see a lot of cards, potentially even a red if we do score early and maybe their heads go a little bit. So that'll be something to keep an eye on, if we can try to frustrate players who are looking like them, maybe losing their head, try to run at them more often. So get Routier running at them directly and Somerville, and that would be a good thing for us. But yeah, it will be a game of two opposing styles clashing quite violently.
I think you tweeted after the Huddersfield game that Huddersfield had out-EFL'd Preston. I would not be surprised if Millwall managed to out EFL both, make the game as stop-start as possible, as scrappy as possible, look for those duels and aggressive 50-50s as often as they can across the pitch to try and win those and then feed off the scraps. And it's going to be horrible. And yeah, it might largely come down to, and I'm kind of skipping forward to the next question here, but I'll answer it first, I guess. It might largely just come down to who scores first, because if we can score, they're going to have to play a little bit more aggressively, whether that's just hitting the ball out more and getting up the pitch more, or actually trying to play a little bit to try and get back into the game. And I think if that the game becomes like that, it might suit us, because I think in transition we are absolutely excellent. So I think we could score a few if we score early enough, but it really is going to come down to whether they can weather that storm and score the goal first themselves. And if they do, yeah, that could really, really become messy for us. If they get a set-piece goal of some description, which wouldn't surprise me, and sit in on that, I would hate watching this game of football, let's put it that way. Martin, where do you expect this game will be won or lost?
It's definitely going to come down to set piece defending is one of the big things. We need to just try to be limiting the amount of set pieces we give them to start with. No silly fouls around the edge of the area. No dodgy back passes which go out the corners, please. And just trying our best to put out long balls to the flank before it gets to our wingers, because all it takes is it's blocked across and we've got a corner. So we just need to try to avoid those sort of situations as much as we can, because we know how much of a threat they can be, and I think they've got better aerial attackers than we've got aerial defenders, in all honesty. So yeah, there's not anyone in our team who I think can handle Jake Cooper. Because, like you've already mentioned, he's 6'6" and he can attack the ball very well. So if we can limit those opportunities as much as we can, that will help us massively. And as always, with us, the first goal is very important. We do very well when we just do go ahead. I still think we've lost a game where we've gone ahead this season. Is that correct?
No. Two draws, no defeats.
Yeah. So it's always massively important for us this season. Not to say that we've been bad when we have conceded first, because I've come back a number of times, most recently against Leicester. So it can happen. Not to say we covered ourselves in glory in that game, but we did still get the win, which is the most important part. So, yeah, it's going to be an entertaining game for the neutrals, shall we say. Bit nervy for us, though.
But this is definitely not a game to go behind first to a set piece from them, and is it, Dan?
No. I mean, on Jake Cooper, I think Jake Cooper's often the one that draws everybody in, and Leeds have often struggled with, like, not the main threat, isn't it? So it's often like Rodon will get drawn to the main threat, and it's someone like Archie not picking up something at the near post, isn't it? So it's one of our other set-piece defenders not doing their job on a less obvious threat, isn't it? So I kind of wonder if Jake Cooper might be the guy that drags Rodon out of position, and then it's somebody else that, like, profits, perhaps. You know, you might see that from the set-piece. And also, second balls from set-pieces are just in general. Like, Saville's a good ball striker if he just arrives in the box. Obafemi's quick, sharp. He might get onto something, and scruffy. Fleming can hit a good, is a good finisher, I think. So those guys just picking up second balls and getting quick shots away is a factor as well. So we've just got to be really sharp around second balls and obviously set pieces, as you've all said.
Yeah, just it looks on paper like one of our easier games, but we've found quite a few areas where they can hurt us and they might hurt us. Cooper is that big one, and that is a proper clash of the Titans. Him and Rodon attacking set pieces at both ends is going to be great to see. But hopefully, like Martin said, we limit them as much as possible on those set pieces. If we can keep their number of free kicks and corners below five, that would be very, very good. I don't know if we will, but it'd be very good if we could. But yeah, I think that brings us towards the end of the podcast. So just a quick reminder, the website for our Patreon is, Martin?
patreon.com/ASAW, Patreon.
And this is a Sunday kickoff, but we will be back shortly after that to review. And then I think there is a little bit of a break, isn't there, before we play Watford and Hull on Easter weekend, with that dreaded Easter weekend that Leeds United do love. But we'll be back soon. And all that's left for me to say is thank you to Dan.
Cheers, mate. Cheers, mate.
And thank you very much to Martin.
Thank you as well, Adam.
And thank you, dear listeners. We'll see you very soon. Goodbye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.